Okay.
Well. So we don't have enough energy in here.
So we are here, the next version of All Things Richmond podcast. I've got with me a very interesting person doing interesting things in the Richmond area, Mr. Chauncey Jenkins, a.k.a. Chance Fisher. I got that right. It depends on where you are. Depends on that dictates what your name is at that moment.
Indeed. Are you the IRS or are you not?
No, definitely not that. So I've had the pleasure of learning a little bit about you. Let's just start from the beginning. Where'd you grow up?
So I grew up in Richmond. So what's now Randolph, mm-hmm. like I grew up in Randolph, to us, Old West End,
you know, right.
So Idlewood, Lakeview area, around there. And then what's also considered, I don't even know if it's still considered Newtown mm-hmm. anymore. I guess it was called Newtown. But right behind Siegel Center, mm-hmm. I literally grew up across the street from, the spot that used to be Magpie.
Right.
I drove past it the other day. It's something now.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. But it was the corner of Bar and Grill. Shout out to my man V, because we were talking one day about he was working over at that spot called the Corner too. When I think it was one of those crazy Hurricane Floyd or whatever came through.
Yeah.
But yeah, I grew up kind of between there. My parents lived over Randolph, but my grandmother watched me, so I kind of grew up with my grandmother, my grandfather, a lot because mm-hmm. my parents worked. So
gotcha.
I'd be over in Newtown and then kind of leave back and forth. So still scattered across Richmond, but in
right.
Richmond, in the
so
city.
Born and raised Richmond, never left other than from school. You lived here your whole life?
Lived here, born and raised. I left for college. And then
you went to Cornell?
I did.
And so how did you find yourself at Cornell? What led to that?
A conversation with the rep from Brown, this guy Elisha Anderson. I don't know if he will ever see this, but if he does, like, thank
tag
you.
Him with, so
thank you a lot. He's an awesome guy. But yeah, he was the recruiter from Brown, mm-hmm. And I met him, and I really liked their approach to education as mm-hmm. a university, and ended up kind of just talking to him about a lot of different things like Plato's Allegory of the Caves and just random stuff.
Right.
And then told him that, you know, eventually I wanted to own a boutique kind of hotel or whatever. And
right.
he was like, yeah, you know, have you ever heard about Cornell? And I was like, I know they got this crazy bird lab, like they have this ornithology lab. And the only reason I knew about that was because freshman year we had to do a psychology paper
uh-huh.
and in high school. So at that point, I was like, well, gotta figure out something. I don't even remember what my paper was about, to be honest. Something that's probably dying or whatever. But ended up doing that and talking to him. He was like, well, you know, they have, like, one of the greatest, you know, hospitality programs. And I was like, yeah, all right, cool. You know, I'll check it out.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up going there for kind of like a little fall visit session. It was October. It was cold. And, yeah, man, just ended up meeting a ton of cool people. Actually, I met a lot of people that didn't end up going there. They went to some different places. Actually, the dude that runs Rolling Loud was on the same trip visiting Cornell mm-hmm. when I was up there. So,
really?
Yeah, it's super weird. I saw his name. I was like, yo, wait, are you? And he's like, yeah. I was like, that's crazy.
So you went there originally to study the hotel business.
Yeah, exactly.
And then after school, came back to Richmond. Mm-hmm. And what'd you do your first job out of school?
First job out of school was working back at the Jeff
mm-hmm.
because I was interning before that. So I'm kind of bouncing around, working at different hotels. I worked for Four Seasons for a decent bit. I was down in Atlanta for that
mm-hmm.
And kind of like traveling back and forth too, because I was still trying to figure out, you know, which things were we going to make happen. So between here and then going back and forth to San Fran for a little bit too.
Mm-hmm.
But I was working at the Jeff and started out.
For those listening, the Jeff being the Jefferson Hotel.
The Jefferson, yeah. Yeah, so doing, what was the first thing that I did when I got back? I think it was reservations, yeah. I was working in front desk reservations
right.
when I first got back. And our PBX, which is like the hotel mm-hmm. operator.
Right.
So answering calls and trying to transfer it.
Right.
It can get a little confusing in there because there's so many different outlets.
Right.
And yeah, so that was it.
So you, for those listening, you are now the general manager of Le Maire.
I am.
Very well known for the folks not in Richmond, very well known restaurant here in the Richmond food scene.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to that, you worked at TJ's downstairs, assistant manager at LeMaire, and now general manager at LeMaire. So walk me just through your, I guess, career growth, like how you progressed from the front desk to the general manager at LeMaire. Like anything pivotal stood out in your mind over the 7 years you worked there?
I think for me is I respected every job that I had. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to know as much as I could. Mm-hmm. You know, I still wanted to own a property, and I was just eyes wide open. And I say at that point, not saying that I don't now, but I made a specific promise to myself that I wouldn't own one unless I own the real estate. So, right. and that's a big difference. There are a lot of companies that are management companies that mm-hmm. come in, but they don't own. So any mm-hmm. you can change the flag, and a lot of different things happen. I didn't want that to be a thing. If anything, I would want to be able to sell my property later on, mm-hmm. but still own the real estate of that and all that piece of it. But yeah, just respecting every single piece of it, what it had to offer, how it was instrumental in the guest experience, not from a theory standpoint, mm-hmm. but in all actuality. I mean, it's not a hotel chain, you know, mm-hmm. It's like a small family of hotels now, with that. So seeing how you would run a luxury property with kind of not that huge backing and that huge mm-hmm. brand name. So that every single job that I had for me was just kind of critical. Mm-hmm. I learned something, and then it offered me a different flexibility to kind of still do things with my life mm-hmm. at that same point. So I wouldn't say that there was anything that really, I wouldn't say that there was something that really stood out. I mean, maybe that's a better question for people that gave me responsibilities
sure.
On that side of it.
Right.
But for me, I just really, I spent a lot of hours there, and I worked a lot. And not saying that, I mean, you know, we tell people to work hard all the time, mm-hmm. you know, but what does that mean? Like, are you efficiently working hard, or are you not? You know, mm-hmm. for me, I just wanted to learn as much as I could. I would like stay behind, meet people from other shifts. Just kind of find out what was going on in their lives, you know, how long they've been there, you know, made a lot of friends in that place, like over the years, a lot of different relationships. So for me, it was just kind of something that grew with me. Mm-hmm. And my biggest thing is that I knew I wanted to get back on food and beverage side, mm-hmm. just to be right in the middle of things as much as I could, just kind of like in the pulse of culture, seeing how you effectively deal with people, because the dining experience is probably the longest experience that we interact with guests. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not at the front desk. Mm-hmm. The room, I mean, yeah, you know, you might attend the room, but very rarely will you run into guests unless you see them in the hallway.
Right.
You know, somebody standing in the hotel and they're dining in that hotel, that is the longest experience that they're having in that hotel.
So sure.
For me, I needed to learn as much about that as possible.
Right.
No matter what I did next, whatever career I was in, and I think it helped me a lot in music as well. Like, it wasn't all of those things worked very much together for me.
Yeah, so still a goal to own a boutique hotel. That's still something you want to do?
Yeah, down the line, and just kind of looking at the scale of where I want that to be. You know, it could end up that it's not a hotel per se, mm-hmm. and it might just be like a really nice bed and breakfast. You know, we might mm-hmm. do something that's, you know, like 24 or 30 rooms mm-hmm. that we can actually build out to be nice and luxurious and have mm-hmm. fun. But the goal was to actually do a music themed boutique hotel. Mm-hmm. Maybe nothing more. When I first set out to do it, I didn't want to have anything more than like 115 rooms, mm-hmm. something like that, different floors. You can kind of walk into your concierge, call in, say the things that you like, and have rooms that were kind of painted and based on different periods and mm-hmm. all that stuff, with a portion that had like studio space in there. And we could also get people in from the local community to come in and teach mm-hmm. music classes and things of that nature.
Gotcha.
So finding a way to, since art and music was being taken out of the schools, mm-hmm. find a way to put that into a structure mm-hmm. that could also help out traveling artists, whether major or not. Mm-hmm. That was the idea behind it. It was very small.
But. Yeah, so interesting. So segue into the music scene. So you go by the name Chance Fisher in the music scene. So tell yeah. me about your music career, how it started. Tell the folks what you do and how they can find you.
Yeah, so I would say music started for me when I was, about seven. Mm-hmm. Right, that's when I started really doing poetry and writing and going back and forth. Mm-hmm. Wasn't something that it was really hard to come out and own something. Like, mm-hmm. this is what you do.
Sure.
You know, especially if you're an artist. You know, some people, I take that back. There's some people who take that and they run with it and they're like, mm-hmm. this is what I do. But not, they're usually trash. But, you know, nah, like for real. Like, yeah. I'm not even going to sugarcoat that. You know, a lot of people that like take that and own that early, their talent is being able to take things and own it early and speak out loud. And then everything else is kind of like very mediocre. But mm-hmm. there's something to be said for that. I'm not going to take that away.
Right.
But yeah, I was like 7 writing and chilling and, you know, just kind of going back and forth. I was always rapping around the neighborhood or just kind of at school, just seeing where we could go. I think it was really about, I was only like 13, 14, where I met up my homie Juan. My homie Juan Pierce, who I love dearly. We had NBF Records, Natural Boy and Flores. So it was like me, him, and a couple other guys. And, you know, rest in peace to my boy Ryan, my boy Ryan Page, who really got me into rapping a lot. You know, we would just be on the phone every day, sparring back and forth. And then my man Fair, you know, who's out here now, great, you know, a great dude.
Mm-hmm.
Me and Fair used to kind of rap battle back on the phone. I mean, there are a lot of people who are like in this scene that I kind of came up with. So that was my introduction into it. But I wasn't really out here recording like that. Like, we used to all go over to Donland, which is actually right over there by where Strange Matter was.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't really the one that was like doing the recording. I'd just be out there listening. My man, like Three-Way Slim, mm-hmm. came up around us as well. You know, so that was it's a lot of different people. And we mm-hmm. all knew who Nick was, like mm-hmm. Nick, you know, Nick, Radio B, like all those dudes, like we knew their names. And I was mm-hmm. always like, all right, man, but I'm nice though. You know, I went by the name State of Mind back then. That was my mm-hmm. rap name. I had some terrible rap names. I really did. But everybody who knew me, like knew me as like State of Mind at that point. And yeah, I was really dumb.
So then, where, like, the last couple places you performed, like, give the folks an idea of what kind of venue, what type of place you might perform at in Richmond these days.
Anywhere. I mean, you could honestly really see me anywhere mm-hmm. at this point. You know,
how many nights in 2019 will you perform?
Have I performed in
2019? No, this year will you?
Oh, will I perform? Year. How many nights? Ooh, probably. I don't know yet. It depends on when we get this project out. It's supposed to come out March 15th.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can get this thing out March 15th, then I'll probably do, like 30, 40 last year? I'll probably do about 50 shows.
50 shows a year? That's a lot. And then where do you record here in Richmond?
Well, mm-hmm. I record over at Track Meet over in the mm-hmm. South Side. So shout out to my man Joseph Ritzik. He's mm-hmm. a cool dude. And actually downstairs in this building,
in Overcoast,
with JL. Gotcha. I was actually trying to hit him up today.
Does he produce for you?
Yeah, JL does produce for me. Yeah, some stuff. We've been playing kind of like record tag for a minute. But JL is the man.
Right.
But yeah, you could literally see me. I mean, I've played
50 shows is a lot. I mean, that's once a week. I mean,
it is a lot, and that's the thing. You know, it might not be me doing my own mm-hmm. shows, but I've done like a ton of features. So you could see me at the National probably mm-hmm. on somebody's thing, or you know, I'll probably be at some festival during the summer. We did a ton. We opened the ICA last year, which was super. That was fun. Did that show outside. We did the Bird for Hamilton, like when they did that whole thing, sold that out. And
are you booking gigs yourself, or do you have someone that helps you with that?
It's a lot of me kind of just being in the right place at the right time and picking up the phone and deciding whether or not it's gonna happen.
Right.
You know, I don't have anybody that books for me. I would love to have a booking agent. It would make my life so much easier.
Sure.
You know,
I'm sure.
Because it's a lot of making sure I pick up the phone and respond at a time that's reasonable, but I usually don't have time to respond to anything reasonably. So.
Right. But yeah, so that my next question kind of is like, you're in two worlds, you're in the food world, you're in the music world. I guess like what percentage of the time are you in either? And do the two help each other? Do they detract from each other? Like how do the two worlds live together?
Yeah, it kind of depends on the day. Sometimes they do detract from each other. Mostly in kind of like just overall health, you know, like,
right.
where
lack of rest and sleep.
Rest and sleep, or where I am mentally, because there's a piece of it where you don't want to lose your integrity in mm-hmm. either thing that you're doing. And when you are at a particular level in both things that you're doing, like in music and food, mm-hmm. I really can't afford to sacrifice mm-hmm. one of them being slightly bad. So I would rather spend more time to make a record mm-hmm. and wait to put it out, as opposed to like rushing it and then right. it's like, yeah, we're not gonna put this guy on the show, this right. guy's trash, you know?
Right.
So there is a piece. I'm not a very patient person mm-hmm. usually, but I've had to be very patient with myself and my schedule and just my overall general health. So there are ways where I think working in hospitality has helped me become a better performer mm-hmm. and it's helped me figure out better things to do for shows to incentivize people to come. Mm-hmm. But I also think being able to deal with crowds and get past the initial fear of getting on a stage mm-hmm. also helps me set the stage for what I do in the restaurant, and being able to kind of walk up to a lot of different tables and ask them where they are in their experience, or to mm-hmm. really be able to talk to people from a lot of different backgrounds, from different right. places, just from knowing and interacting with folks. You know?
Right.
So those things work hand in hand. And I think a lot of people think of shows as not being genuine, or, mm-hmm. you know, being on stage in a performance is not you being yourself. But I think mm-hmm. it's really you being almost like the perfect version of yourself, or, mm-hmm. or the fullest, most honest version of yourself, where you're also most vulnerable. And I think a lot of that is the same way in a restaurant as well. You know, mm-hmm. those things work hand in hand for me all the time. So mm-hmm.
10 years from now, do you see yourself doing both?
No, not at all.
Which one's
going to 5 years from now, I don't see myself doing both, to be honest.
Do you know which one you're going to pick or is it going to be something else completely?
I think it's going to, I know the answer to this question. I don't know how to answer it yet.
Okay.
But no, not in a way of, I think these two things are going to look very different mm-hmm. when I present it to people.
Right.
So I will still be in hospitality, very, very much so. Right. I don't think I'll ever leave hospitality, and I won't leave music. The thing that'll look most familiar to people is I'll still be performing. Yes. Yeah, what I'll be doing in hospitality is a little more fun. Okay. I'll say that. I won't put
tuned.
It all out there
stay
yet.
Stay tuned.
Yeah, but I'll definitely be
5 years from now.
I'll be in hospitality, not on the ops side.
Right.
That's the one thing I want to move out of. Mm-hmm. I want to move more into experiential, mm-hmm. and then creating a company that allows people to do their own operations, but mm-hmm. I can help them on the experiential side of it. Kind okay. of garnering support, coming up with creative ideas and strategy on that portion of it.
Okay.
So it will still be hospitality, just a different sector of it.
Gotcha. Interesting. So I want to talk, kind of bouncing back to the food scene for a second. Mm-hmm. Richmond's food scene obviously gets a lot of pub. It's very interesting. It's changing constantly, and I feel like the bar keeps getting raised. And so being at La Mer, how much do you think about how important is it staying innovative, staying current with what's constantly changing on the food scene? Is that something that keeps you up at night? Does it scare you?
Doesn't scare me. I'm not afraid of things like that. Things like that I welcome. If you're afraid of change like that, mm-hmm. and you're afraid of the things around you and you're threatened, it'll come out, and the moves that you make will be vindictive, mm-hmm. and they don't need to be. Mm-hmm. It should spur you to be a better creative. Like when I see other people rap, mm-hmm. and they're really good at it, I don't get discouraged and go back, nah, I'm be like, nah, I bet. All right,
that
cool.
Inspires you, yeah.
I'm gonna show up and it's like, oh, you right. thought that was dope? Nah, let me show you what dope is.
Right.
But you can only do that being comfortable with yourself. I
right.
mean, La Mer's been open since what, 1986? We closed for Reno in 2009, mm-hmm. but we're consistent and we're in a hotel. So mm-hmm. we at least have hotel business with that to sustain. It is very important though that we don't just become that house on the hill that mm-hmm. everybody kind of looks at and sees and be like, oh my God, like, mm-hmm. you know, they're over there and they're this, you know, this expensive, lofty idea. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want to die being an idea to mm-hmm. people, like being the thing where it's like, oh, I proposed there. And then every other time I don't think about it because so it is important for us to remain creative, mm-hmm. vital, and push culture forward in a good way as well. one of the things I'm working on right now, that's kind of still in its infancy, is we're redesigning. So we redesigned our patio, which I guess that isn't in its infancy. Got all new furniture, kind of took that little iron stuff away. And then we turned it into couches, low coffee tables, one kind of big cantilever. And how I would like to look at it is, now this is our open air lounge. You know, it's not the porch outside. This is an extension of our lounge outside for you to come. I'm not going to compete with you on having a rooftop. I'm not going to be like, hey, yo, can we build a rooftop? That's not what we do. But we have this little area to bring in. So we're going to start doing some cool little lounge parties out there. The first one, we're planning to do with Grey Goose, called Shuck Shuck Goose. It's going to be real fun. oysters and Grey Goose, and you get a golden egg when you show up, and you open that up. It's like nice little small prizes. We'll have a buffet, and then kind of like some butler things, and have just some small things for people to kind of get to know each other on that. And we're going to use that as the launch for that area. And then maybe looking at what I want to do outside of just making sure that the food and the beverage is creative, look at smart programming for the restaurant as well, to get people to come there to look at it as, in school we talk about the idea of restaurant as the third place, you know, between work and home, what's the third place where you spend the most of your most time, you know. So how do we weave this into being part of someone's life? You know, how do we make this like an indelible memory for them? How do we make this a place that's comfortable for them, that's affordable and approachable for them as well? So maybe that's not coming in. I don't need you to come in and eat dinner with me every day, but you might want to come in, grab drinks or something at happy hour. You know, how do we give you something that's fun, that's innovative, that's fresh, that doesn't deter the brand from what it is, and it doesn't pull the brand down? So creativity and innovation are important for me, and I think it's even more important to have places around you, because otherwise everyone would be stale, and I think that was a problem in Richmond for a long time.
Yeah,
you only had a couple places, and then those places got old because they didn't feel like they needed to do anything. It needs to be this way, and eventually, you know, like the bubble's gonna pop. Same thing with like a development cycle. At the end of a development cycle, like you reach too much, like the bubble has to pop at a certain point. So yeah, things will fail and things will fall. And I'm not waiting on somebody's downfall. It will happen. It has to happen. That's vital as well. It's just the cycle of life. But having that new creative energy out there, that boundless creative energy, yeah, that's awesome. That's what the city needs. It also needs to grow around it at the same time. If one thing grows too quickly, and I think the rest of the culture around it doesn't kind of meet that, I think that's also going to fail. And it's going to cause people to pull back and feel like they shouldn't do anything more. So I don't want to see that happen,
right?
Because that'll kind of push us back into like early Richmond, and that won't be fun,
right? sure. So at the end of these podcasts, we typically do like a lightning round, favorite this, favorite that. Tailor yours a little differently based on your background in food and music. So maybe instead of just one favorite restaurant in Richmond other than Le Maire, maybe give us 3 to 5 of your favorite spots to eat.
Oh yeah, man, I can definitely do that.
Yeah.
All right. First is always gonna be Cezanne. Like I will never not listen.
Explain that a little bit more. If it's at your bet, passion about it, why is that?
Yeah, well, because Cezanne goes right back into being what I just said about the place where I will spend a lot of. Even when I didn't live close to Cezanne,
you live close to there now.
I live close. I can walk. It takes me probably 5 minutes to walk to Cezanne now, you know, and that's, it depends on how hungry or how drunk I am, but you know, it takes me about probably 5-7 minutes max to get to Cezanne, if that much, you know. So that's dangerous. That's really dangerous, sure, seeing how passionate I am about it.
Yeah,
but no, it's one of those places where, like, you know, it's like, I know I'm gonna go there and see people that I know and love. Like, I'll be able to go there, talk to Chris Packer about wine, talk to my man Justin. I mean, Justin is super, super dope, what he's been able to do with that bev program. I mean, everybody over there. Adam Hall's food is fantastic. Thomas, both Thomases, over there are like really great people. I mean, I went there and had a chicken liver mousse one day, and it was like this nice little Quinnell thing, and I'm like, all right, cool, this is gonna be the first, like, my first little small piece, then I'll go eat something else. And I ate the chicken liver mousse, and I was like, yo, I'm full. Like, how am I full? It's this little Quinnell, like this little football size, you know, chicken liver mousse joint, and I'm really like, this is great.
Yeah.
And like every bite, I'm like, yo, this is nuts. Like every experience that I've ever had at Cezanne has been fun, and it's just a place where I can walk into a ton of people that I know in the industry and love, that built kind of relationships with over time. And nobody's been fake with, mm-hmm. you know, like everybody there has been like super chill. I mean, I've had nights where I've been like, yo, man, I was really drunk. Like, I'm mm-hmm. sorry, did I mess up? You know, like,
I've never had that experience.
You know,
kind of things.
You know, so just make, you know, and then people are being like, oh, no, man, you're good. So Cezanne, I think, it's been there for, it's awesome, and you can choose your adventure. You can chill in the market if mm-hmm. you don't want to kind of like be in the dusky, dark, brooding side, you know.
Right.
But it's beautiful. But so Cezanne will probably always be my number one outside of La Mer. Metzger's crazy.
Yeah.
Like Metzger is just one of those places where, like, it's like the first hug you get from your grandma, you know, and it just lets you know that, like, love is unconditional. Right. You know,
that's
like,
how the food makes you feel.
The food at Metzger is like it feels like unconditional love to me.
Right.
And I think there's a certain intention there that makes it that beautiful. And I mean, of course, like, I love anything that Brittany does, like, mm-hmm. you know, between Metzger and Brenner and whatnot. But there's just a certain people, like, you walk in, you see Chell, mm-hmm. Chell's there, you know, it's like super, super chill. I think Metzger, I went to Metzger for my birthday this year. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how important it, yeah.
Wow.
I love that restaurant. So those two off top. And then my childhood favorite, I always love it, Piccola. Italy and subs, like,
yeah, VCU.
Yeah, right, yeah. Over there. You know, I've known Rick all my life too. So Ricky's like such a dope guy. The Italian sub I will always get. You know what I'm saying? I'll get that what is it, like the cheesesteak, but you mm-hmm. you know, take the mayo off, put some mustard on the cheesesteak. It's fire. Like it's really a dope little spot. Those are like my, I mean, there are a ton of places that I love in the city, but off the top, off the rip, like, those would be the places,
yeah.
that hands down, if everything else burned down and died, I need those. You know, and a good 7-Eleven so I can get my Arizona iced teas. But you know, outside of that, like, those are my spots.
There was a stretch where I went to VCU grad school at night, and I worked at VCU during the day, and mm-hmm. had like an hour break, and I'd run over to Piccola's. I was always a chicken parm guy, but I
the chicken parm is fire too.
I know. Like, then I'd eat it, and then I try not to fall asleep. I had a 3-hour class. I try not to fall asleep because it does put you to sleep.
Yeah, man.
But yeah, all right, that's great. That was definitely by far the most passionate response we've gotten to the food question. We've gotten lots of responses all over the board as far as places people like, and I've had people say, well, I can't decide, but like, I've never had someone be that passionate about their first, and then it sounds like Metzger's got to be a close second.
It is, yeah, and those things, I think they're kind of like side by side for me. Like, places, yeah. that, there are a lot of places that I like,
mm-hmm.
but when we get into a thing about love, you mm-hmm. know, that's different. Like, there's a lot of music that I like,
right.
that I tolerate, or that, you know, it's just like, all right, it's cool. Like, I respect that one song you did, but maybe mm-hmm. not everything there. I don't think that everything in the city necessarily always comes together as conceptually as I would like it to. And I don't think that consistency always happens. And I don't think that that's the fault of the people that run the restaurants. I think mm-hmm. it has a lot to do with the oversaturation of the market and the fact that anybody could get up and leave at any time and go somewhere else when they mm-hmm. think they've learned enough so they can start their own program. I think that's important because I feel like a lot of people don't. When I go back to talking about respecting the job, that you have, a lot of folks don't take the time to really soak up the game mm-hmm. of the job that they have, soak up all that knowledge, and then they immediately just want to run and do something else because they feel like they paid this much to go to Culinary Institute of America and they know mm-hmm. everything. And it's like, you can barely saute this without burning the skin. You know, and it's like, now you want to open your spot because somebody gave you a little bit of money, and it's like, all right, cool, but who are you getting? Where are you mm-hmm. pulling from? And is it vital? And is it like time test it on a busy night when this opens. How does it sustain itself?
Right.
Like for quality side. Mm-hmm. And then on when it gets slow, how does the business sustain itself after its honeymoon period? Mm-hmm. Like these are two things you need to know.
Right.
You know, and so I feel like there are places that I love that have things that I like, but don't always meet the expectations of what I'm looking for as a person that's in mm-hmm. food and in art.
Right.
Because of that. And I'm not gonna like talk down on somebody because of that. But it's the truth.
Yeah, so so if I hear you correctly, it sounds like your experience in the hotel world, you've taken your time to learn and invest in each position to learn like deeply so that you can later pass that knowledge on, whether you're training or employing someone, to make sure that experience is consistent, that experience what you want it to be. And you're saying in the restaurant world, people are skipping some steps, and that's going to hurt them in the long run.
Yeah, I think consistency, and consistency doesn't mean doing everything the same way all the time. There is room for personality mm-hmm. in that. But it means learning the foundations, the fabrics behind mm-hmm. why you do the things that you do.
Right.
I'm big on not training you how to do a thing, but trying to see if you know the reason why you're doing the thing that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would be the guy that's like, hey, I know we talked about this, and I know you don't want me to talk to you for the next 5 minutes about why this is important, but I'm still mm-hmm. going to talk to you for the next 5 minutes about why this is important. And you might not even want to hear it, but it doesn't matter to me because I need to know that somebody held you accountable.
Right.
Somebody told you. So you can't get on the other side of this and say, well, I never learned that or never heard that. It's like, that's false. You did.
Sure.
You chose not to do.
Right.
That's different.
Well, it goes down to empathy for the customer or whoever's experiencing what you're doing.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Well, the guest doesn't care. So there's so many people that work in different positions in the hotel, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if you don't work in a restaurant and I ask you what's good on the menu and you don't know, that's a problem. You know, like that's an issue to me. And I won't say that there aren't things like that we work on every day. And mm-hmm. I'm not over here even telling you that we're perfect at mm-hmm. what we do.
Right.
You know, but I will say that there are a lot of people that have been here in their roles for a longer period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a lot more experience in seeing how to adjust to a situation that could throw somebody else off completely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I've seen a woman have a heart attack in front of me. I've watched a woman, you know, like in the middle of dinner service, and we didn't stop. You know, you can't stop with those kind of things, you know? So that's an extreme,
but
you know, just kind of small stuff.
Like all right, well, you touched on this in your answer to music. You're starting to reference there's musicians that you love.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you want to do local and non-local or mush it all together, but why don't you throw out 3 to 5 musicians that you feel strongly about as you do Metzger and Cezanne?
All right, cool. Like locally, I will definitely tell you. All right, so it's really hard to get past Nick Radio and Mike. Like those dudes are dope. They've been doing music for a long amount of time. Noah O is the same way. I really love Michael Millions, and particularly because I think Mike does stuff with words. Like Mike, you can go to a Mike show and you don't necessarily have to have, like, it doesn't have to have all that like energy and hype mm-hmm. and jumping around. Like, and those are the things that I like to do at my shows, right?
Right.
But Mike has a way of being a presence on a stage that commands you to look at him,
mm-hmm.
right? And listen to what's actually being said.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard. Like, that's a different type of performing. Mm-hmm. Like, those are people that have, like, performed in rooms where, like, you know that they've been in a room where it was only 3 or 4 people
mm-hmm.
and they had to perform. So when they get the crowds that are crazy and they're selling out, that's a different kind of performer mm-hmm. at that point, because you know how to reach somebody like when it's right there. So that's the same kind of energy that I love. So if we're talking locally, like I love those dudes. Of course, my man 3-Way Slim, all power to him. I think he has a lot to add. 757, I'd say my man Tyler Righteous, Mike Strong, my boy Fat Matt, who's going by like Who now. Like, those dudes are dope. And they're I could really start spouting off a list of people that are local that I think are really dope, you know, but those dudes off the top are really are important. Of course, the Mutant Academy guys or whatever. I think Anakin's been dope for a minute though. Like out of Mutant Academy, mm-hmm. I heard 21 Candles. It, you know, I was like, yo, this record is crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think my man Henny Lowe gets enough love, but Henny's like dope as well. And Vic Kahuna, like those dudes, like out of Mutant Academy, I think they're dope. Then of course, you know, I got my homie Dr. Millionaire, who's gonna drop some stuff mm-hmm. soon. Larger artists. And again, if I missed anybody, that's not like a, it's not a, people know how I feel about them. Mm-hmm. I show people love every day.
Sure. Yeah, it's a hard one. I've asked a couple of local folks that, and they're always afraid to leave someone off.
Yeah. I mean, like this hat, the Green and Gold Global, like that's my man, Sega Spicoli, Flexico and Bandolero. Like, you know, those dudes are dope. And I respect a lot of people. Before I get to like larger artists, mm-hmm. what I really look for, like out of people locally, is that they're doing the things, like they're doing their own stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like they want to actually put in the work without waiting for somebody else to love them. Mm-hmm. And that's hard in Richmond, because right. you kind of look at people, and especially if they don't do what you do, mm-hmm. or you feel like you're dope, you know, when you're first kind of getting into it, before you get past this, there's a sentiment of, yo, how are you, you know, these people are dope. Like, you know, mm-hmm. like what's going on? Like, I know I'm dope. Like, I know my stuff is tight. Once you mm-hmm. get, you break past that point and you do whatever, like, you know that you do well mm-hmm. and you focus on that, it opens up a ton of opportunities and you will establish yourself. You don't have mm-hmm. to wait for somebody to put you on or show you love. You'll create that love. Mm-hmm. What people don't get is what they're actually doing mm-hmm. is creating demand. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you are creating demand for a product, and then you can control that supply. You can be De Beers mm-hmm. if you want to and not give anybody anything mm-hmm. and then just find out different ways to manipulate that content to control demand mm-hmm. or you can flood with supply if you want to. That's right. That's up to you.
Sure.
But once you get past the fact that like you're not looking at the other people mm-hmm. around you and you're controlling your product, that's mm-hmm. That's when it really becomes fun. Mm-hmm. Larger artists, of course, I listen to a ton of people. My favorite person right now is probably Vince Staples. Mm-hmm. I think I love Vince Staples out of everybody, because I just feel Vince Staples. He's like super, super real to me. He's dope. Mm-hmm. I love Schoolboy Q. You know, I listen to a lot of Schoolboy. Always, forever, Outkast fan. Anything that Three Stacks does. If we're talking rap, yeah. Outside of that, like music, I listen to a lot of Florence and the Machine. Mm-hmm. I think Florence Welch is probably one of the best writers of our time, so I listen to her a lot. And yeah, man, yeah. I listen to a lot of James Blake. So
okay, cool, I don't know. Awesome. Well, I'm sure we're running out of time. So, anything you want to talk about before we go to the last question?
No.
Are you good? Okay. So last question. So. Back to like the city, the Richmond, which you're kind of proud of in our city. So you've got a friend coming in to visit Richmond on a Friday afternoon, going to leave on Sunday, midday. So you've got a weekend with them, and you have a weekend to show them your city. What are you going to do with that person? Where are you going to take them to eat, to hang out?
All right. So we got to start this with Sunday, because mm-hmm. You got to figure out Sunday and work backwards.
Okay.
Because Sunday can fail.
Yeah.
I just want to let you know right now,
yeah.
like Sunday is a toss up. Like
right.
Sunday could be really dope, or Sunday could be like, hey, yo, I'm broke, you know, or
so
we're
gotta,
not going to make
so you
it.
You got a budget for Sunday, or whatever you want to do Sunday.
It's a lot, you know. So if we're really, really trying to impress mm-hmm. somebody, it depends on who it is, you know.
Sure.
I tell everybody to, you know, it's kind of like one of those rites of passage to go to like brunch at the Jefferson, right? You're either going to brunch at the Jefferson or brunch at Millie's.
Right.
Now, my personal favorite, I like brunch at Heritage.
Right.
I think brunch at Heritage is dope. Love the big hot mess. You know, you can get that vegan if you want to. But I love that space in there, and I pretty much love anything that like those guys are doing over there.
Right.
Much love to Joe Sparata and the entire team, Michael Werner. Like, those guys are super dope. Amelia, like, all of them are fun.
Right.
Damn, Lindsay's over there too now. You know, everybody.
Right.
So it's a good group of people. So Sunday would probably be something like that. And then if it's a nice day outside, like that would be the point where it's like, yo, definitely like check out the river.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think Sundays at the river make more sense than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday is a toss up, right? Because you really need to find out where you're gonna go to lunch. I'd probably pick Dynamo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'd probably go to Dynamo, like chill out. Get like some nice, like small little plates or something like that. Figure that out. Afterwards, I'd probably hit the ICA because I think that museum is super dope. Mm-hmm. I think it's much better to go there on a Saturday than Friday because, you know, I don't have to like run into like random students that might be rushing to class or something like that.
Right.
Just go there, chill. Late night, you know, probably grab dinner or something. Notice I didn't mention anything about breakfast on Saturday because once we get to Friday, you'll realize why we didn't eat breakfast on Saturday.
Yeah, you're walking backwards, right? Yeah, it makes sense though, yeah.
You know, I'll probably grab drinks at La Mer because happy hour is dope. You know, mm-hmm. I'm getting my little plug.
Sure.
Over yeah. there. But yeah, grab drinks at La Mer. And then I would definitely take them to Cezanne. Even if they only tried the wings are crazy. The little dry rubs, you gotta have the wings.
Yeah.
Over there. But pretty much any dish over there. Their cocktail list is nuts. I mean, what?
Yeah.
I think they got like 23-30 cocktails in there right now.
Right.
It's crazy. All like different stuff. So we probably do that Saturday night and then figure out who's DJing where.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably find out where my DJ hoodie is, and wherever hoodie is, that's where we'd end up. Friday. Mm-hmm. So Friday is weird because this is probably the day that somebody's arriving. So we're not really going to do anything about, we're probably starting right at dinner.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm definitely going to. We're either going to Alewife or we're probably going to go. I would probably take them to Alewife on this first trip mm-hmm. and then see if there's a. If not, I would go to Metzger, definitely. Go there after that, see if there's somebody doing jazz. So Amelia's does jazz mm-hmm. every Friday, so we'd probably swing by there, see what's going on. The Hof usually has pretty good events on Friday nights. Again, we have to speak to. We don't have Flora anymore, and we don't have Strange Matter, so that's the point where we're missing out. But probably check that out. If there's a night where Lonnie and Kelly are at the museum, then we'll probably go over there and check that out or whatnot. See if we can find some kind of little late night spot after we get drunk. We probably just do a lot of drinking that night. So hitting a ton of different bars. Of course, we start with Cezanne there. Comfort is dope because they have a crazy little bourbon program over there. I think you always have to take somebody to the Village.
Mm-hmm.
Probably go to Helen's, get like, you know, a couple of like PBR, some tall boys or something like that. We'd probably swing by Heritage over there. They have a little like printer that can like put your face on a drink if you wanted to. So that's super dope. So that'd probably be like the tour of drinking on Friday night. We'd hit every place. We definitely and would probably try to end our night at Brenner. I can almost guarantee. If we can sneak in, it depends on the night. If I can sneak in the Veil on Friday, I'll sneak it in on Friday, but that might be Saturday before the museum kind of thing or after the museum. The Veil has to happen in there at some point though.
Yeah. So IPA gives you a better appreciation for art.
Love sure. Veil. Yeah. Look, man, Veil, Vossen, Triple Crossing, like off the top. Hardywood, if Hardywood, but you got to choose like if it's going to be like the one in the city or West Creek.
Right.
I still like the one that's over in Scott's Edition because then you can do your whole little brewery tour. That would probably be where we're going. Friday, drinking a lot. Saturday, hit some museums, do dinner, you know, maybe find a good DJ night and then figure out what we're doing on brunch on Sunday.
Gotcha. Well, man, it sounds like a fun weekend. I'm in if you do that.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a weekend. I like it. Well, cool, man. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Thanks for doing what you do in Richmond. People like you make Richmond more interesting and a better place to live, so we appreciate you.
Awesome.
Cool. Thanks, man. Yeah.
Thanks.
Have a good one.